You are Locked On Broncos, your daily podcast on the Denver Broncos, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
And the Denver Broncos have taken Super Bowl 50.
You know what time it is. That's right. It's time to drop some knowledge. You are Locked On Broncos. I am Chad Jensen, the publisher of MileHighHuddle.com. Luke Polglaze is out tonight after holding down the fort like a champion the last few days. Apologies, you know, this week's been hectic, and I'm sure you're expecting to have the band back together. But today, we have the next best thing, the one, the only, Eric Trickle, Mile High Huddle senior draft analyst. Eric, thanks for joining us yet again, putting in the extra time. How are you, my friend?
I am great. How are you tonight?
Very swell and excited to talk about some Broncos. I've had a little bit of withdrawals, and I've been listening, of course, to each and every episode this week. Luke did with you, with Nick as well, and it was great hearing you guys spitball some NFL draft prospects and just kind of how that relates to the Broncos. And I know you, Eric, of course, are one of the most in-depth, crazy, maniacal draft guys out there.
Yeah, it's always an exciting time this time of year. There's that song by, can't remember who they're called, of No Sleep Till Brooklyn. I think Luke and I have made it. It's No Sleep Till May.
Yeah, exactly. And I always look forward to it, you know, this time of year, reading your stuff, reading Luke, and, you know, and even now reading Nick, for example, because, and I've said this before, I'll be the first one to say, I do not in any way, shape, or form consider myself to be a draft Nick. That's why I lean on you guys and your expertise. And I know, you know, people listening to this and people who read the content on MileHighHuddle.com, you know, maybe some of them appreciate it, but I think most people don't fully understand all the research and the hours and the time that goes into not only studying the film, but actually breaking it down, you know, taking the notes, formulating your analysis. And Eric, you could speak to that as well as anybody, how intensive a process that really is.
It's very intense. There's a common thing among scouts that you want to do at least 3 to 5 games minimum. And you're looking at, even though it may be a 15-minute cut-up, you're looking at 45 minutes at least per game tape. That's, so you're looking at 4 or 5 hours of one prospect. Then they're having to break it down, keep track of all this stuff. I keep track of snap counts. I keep track, depending on what position they play. If they're a receiver, I keep track of targets, defensive back targets, all these different kind of stuff. And it's a lot of work. It's hours upon hours of just watching the same kind of play over and over and over.
It really is. And for me, I love it. I appreciate it. You know, I get to learn more about the incoming draft class through these next couple months through you and all the other colleagues than throughout the rest of the year. So everybody listening, go check out our work over at MileHighHuddle.com. And, you know, Eric's been with me at MHH since day one, cranking out killer content. And we have exclusive premium Broncos content. It's more deep dive stuff for the Broncoholics out there. And don't forget, our premium subscribers get 10% off tickets and 10% off on Broncos team merchandise through Fanatics, which is, of course, the same merchandiser used by the NFL and the Denver Broncos team store. Now, also, follow the show on Twitter, at Locked On Broncos. We really need each listener to just take a quick second, open up the app on your phone, find at Locked On Broncos, and click the follow button. You guys have been really supportive thus far. We're up to, 220 followers, which is good considering that we just started the account 4 or 5 weeks ago. But there are thousands of you that listen to this show, so I know you can do better. But we still appreciate you and we love you. Of course, the home of Locked On Broncos is Audio Boom, but make sure to subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher. We got another season in the books, all the coaching changes, how that's going to affect scheme, players, personnel, free agency. We got the draft. You're not going to want to miss a single episode. Now, Eric, I wanted to talk about this particular topic tonight, get your take on the latest in the Gary Kubiak saga, because when he initially stepped down, and of course we've talked about this on the show before, but when he resigned, he left the impression that it was all due to health concerns. Now, of course, we know that it wasn't all about health, maybe some, but not all. We heard from some sources, at Mile High Huddle. Plus, there was a public report from Jason Cole at Bleacher Report that corroborated it, that Kubiak and John Elway had a little bit of a falling out. Elway wanted Kube to change some things up in how he managed the team, you know, stop calling plays, delegate to focus more on the big picture, and especially after his complex migraine episode after week 5 versus Atlanta. Then when the offense, you know, just continued to stink it up, lead the league in 3 and outs, Elway basically made it known that he wanted a new coaching staff for 2017 on the offensive side of the ball. And all things considered, Kubiak just couldn't see himself firing some of his closest and oldest friends, so he resigned. Now, however, Eric, you know, we hear that after a few weeks off, Kube is already champing at the bit to get working. And I want to talk about that, the latest. But first, since we're on the horn and you and I really haven't discussed this personally, I want to get your take on Kubiak and the events that led to his stepping down. What did you hear? What were your thoughts on the whole charade?
Well, it definitely was more than just health concerns. Elway, there was some friction there about who the starting quarterback was. Elway is a big supporter of Paxton Lynch and has been for, well, since he drafted him. Elway wanted Lynch to start after that Atlanta game. He wanted Lynch to be the starter for the rest of the season. Didn't want to go back to Trevor Siemian. I found that out a couple weeks ago from a source. And then about a week after that, I found out that John Elway didn't even want to draft Paxton Lynch or Trevor Siemian. That he wanted to go elsewhere, but decided to draft Trevor Siemian at the pushing of Gary Kubiak to get him his guy. Elway didn't want him to start all last offseason. That's why he wanted to go after Colin Kaepernick, why he got Mark Sanchez, why he looked into Ryan Fitzpatrick and all these other veteran quarterbacks, Brian Hoyer as well, is to give Denver other options if Paxton Lynch wasn't ready to go. That wasn't Trevor Siemian. Trevor Siemian ended up starting due to Mark Sanchez losing the job. You can talk about his performance all you want. Elway wanted his guy out there. That caused friction. How the offense was performing caused friction. And then the coaching change, desired coaching changes just added to it as well.
Yeah, and that's something that maybe you might be hearing for the first time on this show, that maybe Elway wasn't the most enthusiastic when it comes to, or when it came to, selecting Trevor Siemian out of Northwestern coming off an ACL tear, you know, a split role, a dual quarterback, you know, basically the Northwestern team for a time. Played two quarterbacks in each game, and Elway wasn't super excited about the prospect, but Kubiak wanted him, and that makes sense. I mean, you know, you look at the complexion of how things shook out, and it all makes sense. And I want to talk a little bit more about the latest on Kube with, you know, Super Bowl week on deck and all that. But see, before we do, Trevor Siemian, he made an appearance on Radio Row. He stopped by to talk with Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. Now, Florio, of course, asked him about his reaction personally to Kubiak stepping down. Let's listen in real quick.
Very surprised. You know, just like everybody else, woke up to the news that morning of the game, and, you know, he addressed it. And, you know, hate to see him go, definitely. A great coach, great man. But at the same time, he's got to do what's best for himself and his health. Well, looking back, and maybe the last couple of weeks, I could see some subtle things, but at the time I had no idea, you know. But, you know, it really kind of blindsided me, yeah.
Now, Eric, clearly, of all the current Broncos on the roster, losing Kubiak, I would think, affects Trevor Siemian the most. But how do you think, the way you see it, how do you think Kubiak's absence is going to influence Siemian, who's now going to be entering his third year in 2017?
To be quite honest, I have a hard time seeing Trevor Siemian being on the Broncos come August. All of his supporters are now out the door. Rick Dennison's gone. He was a big supporter of him. Greg Knapp, he's gone. Gary Kubiak, all these guys who really wanted Trevor Siemian are now gone. So I just have a hard time seeing him. If he is still around, he has a big fight in front of him amongst him, Paxton Lynch, and whoever the veteran quarterback is that they bring on, whether it be Tony Romo or they somehow manage to pry Philip Rivers away from the Chargers or Drew Brees from the Saints or all these other rumors floating around. Trevor Siemian has an uphill battle for him once again if he is managed to stick around. But from what I have heard and have been told, he won't be.
You know, and I've gone back and forth on that issue as far as, you know, where do you go from here with Trevor Siemian if you're the Broncos? And we've talked about it on this show, too. It's like, you know, on one hand, you drafted Paxton Lynch in the first round. And if you're really going to move forward with the focus being on him, you hired these fantastic offensive coaches to to draft a scheme around him as a player, play to his strengths, scheme to his strengths, you're going to need him to get all the reps. And if you're competing and sharing reps and it's an open competition and all those platitudes we heard from Vance Joseph a few weeks ago, you know, every rep that you split is taken away from Paxton Lynch. So on one hand, I think to myself, you know, maybe the Broncos would be better off, no matter who the veteran quarterback they bring in might be, to just put Simeon on the trading block and, you know, get what you can for him. And he might have some value out there, maybe a late round pick, and come close to perhaps recouping what you invested in him. But on the other hand, I look at it and I think, you know, depending on the caliber of veteran quarterback they actually end up with, Eric, you know, if they end up with another guy like Austin Davis as their failsafe, then you start, you know, you have to wonder if it wouldn't be the wisest thing to keep Simeon around as an even better failsafe should Paxton Lynch, you know, fall flat on his face to start the 2017 season. Because, Eric, you know there's going to be the pressure to win now, whether it's Lynch or not. And if it is Lynch, the Broncos are going to be feeling that pressure if things start going sideways.
Yeah, they will. There's no matter what, there's a lot of pressure on Lynch. He needs to show that he is ready. He needs to show he is ready as soon as possible. He needs to show that the Broncos didn't waste a first-round pick on him, because first-round picks, you have all that pressure right off the bat. It's, you're not drafting a player in the first round for him to start in a few years. You're wanting drafting them to start now. Now, there's some very few exceptions to that, but yeah, they definitely, it's getting to that point where they need Lynch to step up. And as you said, a veteran quarterback could take away from that, but at the same point, or Trevor Siemian can take away from that, but he also provides a good backup if something were to happen to Paxton Lynch or the veteran quarterback.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. We're going to talk a little bit more about that situation here in a minute, but first, again, it's Super Bowl week. We got all the pomp and circumstance in full effect. NFL guys are walking up and down Radio Row. They're making appearances, shaking hands, you know, handing out business cards. And Gary Kubiak, you know, made a few of those appearances himself and even sat down with Nikki Jabvala of the Denver Post. Now, in the written piece, Kubiak kind of talked about what he's been up to since he stepped down, and although he's not quite ready to get back to work, he is starting to zero in on what he wants to do in the next chapter of his life. And I want to get your take on this, Eric, but let me quote what he said. He said, quote, "I've had some great conversations around the league with some people. Is that personnel? I don't know. I talked to some colleges about various situations that are very interesting to me. What I'm going to do is make sure I take a good break here. It's only been a month. Then I'm going to make a decision and go get after it. I'm hoping within the next couple of months I'll decide on where I want to go next and what I want to do. My next stop is not going to be coaching, and I'm kind of excited about that because there are a lot of things about the game that I've always loved. I love evaluating. I love the draft. I love evaluating players and doing those type of things. I had some really interesting conversations with some colleges, so we'll see," close quote. Now, reading between the lines there, Eric, how do you interpret Kubiak's words and where he goes from here?
It definitely sounds like he wants to get into something in the front office, maybe player personnel, talent evaluating, like a scout, something like that. Doesn't surprise me one bit. Kubiak loves the game of football, loves being around it, but coaching was just too much for him, for his health, which was a big reason why he left. I mean, it's a 30-hour job in a 24-hour day kind of thing.
Right.
And he just couldn't, his body couldn't do it anymore. There's definitely other positions within the front office or scouting that he can do, that he'd be great at. I wouldn't mind having him on as a head scout or a player involved in player personnel. He knows football, and you just want that kind of guy around.
Speaking of which, the Broncos do have a new opening in that department. Just a quick aside, with Adam Peters leaving to join the San Francisco 49ers, he was the director of player personnel. Is that right, Eric?
I'm not sure.
I know, of course, that I'll go back to it. But, you know, that was a guy who's been with the Broncos for 8 seasons. This last year was his first time as a director of personnel in that particular arena in which he was working. You got pro personnel, you've got scouting and the college ranks and all that. And from what I understand, Peter's role was more in the scouting, the college ranks department. But as a quick aside, Eric, Does that worry you at all that he left the front office in Denver to go join San Francisco? Is that going to be felt by the Broncos at this most inopportune time where they're trying to get all their ducks in a row leading up to the draft, get their big board figured out, and you know, be able to move forward?
I don't think it hurts them so much. I mean, it obviously hurts them a little bit. He has a lot of knowledge about how their board stands now, because it seems they start making boards a year and a half before the draft. So they already have some stuff done on players, and he knows this stuff. And as the director of college scouting, he's going to the 49ers with all this information that of where Denver stands at. So it hurts them a little bit. It might cause some changes in strategy. Maybe it might switch some players around, players who he was higher on than others, things like that. But overall, I think that John Elway has a plan, has someone in mind to take over for that position. And I just think they were preparing for the inevitable of him leaving at some point.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how it shakes out. I have, you know, from what we've seen from Elway and Matt Russell, and of course Tom Heckert's still there, and all the phenomenal scouts that the Broncos do have, I have the utmost confidence that they'll continue to do a good job and make the right picks by and large in the draft, and do a good job in terms of finding the diamonds in the rough late in the draft, and those who do not hear their name called on draft day. Now, getting back to Simeon for a minute here, Eric, you know, I've been accused of being a Simeon hater. I know you have as well, but I'm not. I've said countless times before that he exceeded my expectations. He did things at times that, frankly, I thought were well beyond his years and experience, but then he would take a couple of steps back, and he clearly struggled with certain elements of the game. And you would expect that for a young quarterback as a first-time starter. Now, in that same interview we played a clip from earlier with Mike Florio, Simeon was asked about how he thinks he can improve moving forward. Here's what he said real quick.
I think like a lot of quarterbacks, being good in the red zone and being good on third downs, and I think that's something that comes with reps, and you know, hopefully I take another step in that area. But those two spots, definitely.
Now, consistency, Eric, I think seemed to be the biggest thing he lacked. What did you see as Simeon's biggest shortcomings as a first-time starter?
Well, I actually saw a lot of them. There were plays that wowed me, I'm not going to lie. There were a lot of plays that he made that wowed me. Plays that made me think confident that he would be a viable backup, but nothing that really screams starter. Consistency was the biggest one. His staring down the receivers absolutely drove me nuts. But it was often the first read, he'd stare them down, and then you'd see an interception thrown. Not only that, he was missing wide open receivers often. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the exact percentage, but it was a really, really high percentage of the receivers that were wide open that he missed were like the third read guy,
right.
The third option.
Right.
A lot of people want to blame the offensive line. Well, their average time to allowing a pressure was just a tad bit higher than the NFL average, but Trevor Siemian was still holding the ball almost I want to say 0.47 seconds longer than that. So there's definitely some issues with him holding the ball, which when they're allowing a pressure faster than that, the offensive line gets blame. There were some issues with him reading stuff pre-snap, post-snap. He's praised for his intelligence, but at times it was questioned. The negatives that I saw in going over all of his games just outweighed the positives.
Yeah, and you know, I looked at him and saw many of the same things. I mean, I'm nowhere near as up to the elbows in terms of evaluating as you are, nor as accomplished. But as a guy who's lived and breathed football for the vast majority of the 37 years I've spent on this earth, I saw Trevor Siemian a lot of good things. And you know, you look at early on in the season, the first quarter of the season, let's say, you go back and there was a time in that early period of the season when he was leading the NFL in QB rating in the fourth quarter. And I looked at that, and that was really encouraging me as things, you know, even though the offense wasn't clicking, that one aspect of stinking it up early and then coming back and playing and getting it done late and being efficient and making plays when the chips were down really encouraged me. But then as the season continued to unfold, we saw that less and less, and the early struggles in games tended to follow suit in the second half. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I'm nowhere close to saying that, you know, slam the book on Simeon. He's a backup in the NFL, and that's all he'll ever be. I mean, what the hell do I... We don't know that. But I think based on what we saw in his first year as a starter, he's the type of quarterback, he's not going to be the difference maker. He's not going to be the guy that can put the team on his shoulders and be the reason, for example, that a team's going to win consistently week in and week out. But he is the type of quarterback where, you know, if your starter goes down and you need someone to keep things together, hold down the fort, keeps the ship afloat, whatever, you know, cliche you want to use for a game, two or three games, even four games in a row, just to keep things moving. A guy that knows the system, a guy that, you know, is going to be safe with the ball by and large and all. You know, that's Trevor Siemian. I think he's a guy who could really be an asset to the Broncos as a backup, but he just is lacking the killer instinct. He's lacking the physical traits, Eric, that really, you know, you compare the physical athleticism and ability and arm talent, for example, against Paxton Lynch, and it's not even close.
No, it isn't. Paxton Lynch is definitely has a lot more upside, has a lot more tools to work with. There's some people writing him off because he comes off as stupid. He did have some issues learning the playbook last year, but he's part of the issue was that the playbook was, well, it's quarterback friendly. At the same time, it's not quarterback friendly. It takes a lot off of them. It's hard to explain how the system is for quarterbacks, but he's going into a system now that is a much better fit, takes them off of him. I mean, and one thing is he was being asked to play under center, something that he'd never really done in college.
Sure.
He has arm strength. A lot of people thought he was going to be an automatic fit because of his mobility. But yeah, he's definitely just a lot more tools to work with Lynch than with Siemian.
Right, and that's the thing is I would hear that too, and I hear it on Twitter all the time. Anytime we post a Paxton Lynch story on MileHighHuddle.com, you know, you get the Twitter quips from people that are like, you know, call him dumb, make fun of his intelligence or whatever. And I'll be the first one to say that, you know, you listen to his interviews or watch his interviews, and you're up close to him in that way. He comes off as a little bit goofy at times, but the guy knows football. He's an athletic freak, in fact, and it's going to be really interesting to see how this new coaching staff can find a way to get that talent out of him and turn it into production on the field. Now, you know, obviously with the new regime, Vance Joseph, Mike McCoy, you got Bill Musgrave coaching the quarterbacks. There's going to be a new set of eyes evaluating the quarterback competition. And going back to that same interview with Florio, here's what Siemian said about the prospect of having to compete for a job that, frankly, he's already won once.
Sure, that was communicated to us by the season's end, so that wasn't really news to me. And, you know, excited to get back and compete. I think, you know, that doesn't scare me. I think that's part of the deal. You know, I think it'll help both of us get better. And, you know, I know myself, I got plenty of steps to take, and I'm excited about getting a little better and growing.
Now, Eric, Siemian, you know, let's face it, he was way ahead of the curve on Paxton Lynch from the drop in terms of knowing the playbook and not having as much of that thinking aspect involved in his game, where he was able to get out there and just play a little bit more than Lynch was. And Kubiak, he said himself, I've heard him say it many times, that the biggest jump for quarterbacks typically comes between years one and two. Now, applying that to Paxton Lynch, do you think realistically, Eric, that Paxton Lynch can beat Trevor Siemian out in 2017, of course, assuming they're both still on the roster?
Yes, I do. The scheme is a much better fit for him. He has a year of experience. While it is a new scheme, it's a lot closer to what he worked with in Memphis. The coaching staff are being told to build an offense for Lynch, not for Siemian, something that he's a lot more comfortable in, that plays to his tools a little bit. And as you mentioned, Trevor Siemian had an extra year in that playbook. And from what I heard, Trevor Siemian had a hard time picking it up his first year. So that extra year gave him a little leg up then. But definitely the playbook change is being made to benefit Lynch, not hinder him.
Now, we've addressed all the Tony Romo buzz on this show a couple of times, and this probably won't be the last time that we address it. Now, Romo's top destination, as reported by Ian Rappaport maybe a couple months back now, is Denver, and the Broncos have reciprocated that interest in Romo, and you had a source, I know, Eric, who talked about that as well. If he gets released and is a free agent, the Broncos have interest in him. Now, Simeon's been hearing the Romo buzz for a couple of months, the noise, all that. He talked about whether he'll be watching and waiting to see what happens. Here's what he said real quick.
I won't be waiting. I won't be watching or waiting. You know, it's tough for me to kind of think about those kind of things and, until they materialize. So until I'm sure we're going to get another quarterback, you know, I don't know who it'll be. There's only two of us now. So, you know, it's tough for me to really think about that too much. I got, you know, plenty of rehab going on and things I want to work on. So
now, again, Eric, you're plugged in to Dove Valley. I know you have your sources. How serious do you think John Elway is about going after Tony Romo under the right conditions? And if Romo ends up in Denver, where does that leave Trevor Siemian?
There's no doubt that John Elway's very serious about picking up Tony Romo. It's been talked about for months now inside Dove Valley. John Elway called the Cowboys before the trade deadline to talk about Tony Romo. There's definitely been talks there. There's been reports that he's not going to trade for Tony Romo, which, while is a little accurate, it isn't completely accurate. There's a big thing that the Dallas Cowboys won't trade Tony Romo due to financial reasons, due to a simple fact of 19.6 right. million in dead money if they were to trade him. But they say compared to 10 million if they cut him with the post-June first designation. That's where some of it is. They are a little bit more, will be a little bit more hesitant to trade for him, from what I've been told, not wanting to part with anything more than like a conditional fifth round pick. I mean, he's got a bad back and all that stuff, and he has to take on that contract. If he gets cut, I won't be surprised if he jumps right away, sits there and puts out his interest. The situation is fluid, and as my source said, it's very reminiscent of the Broncos and Peyton Manning situation when they went after Peyton Manning.
Well, it'll be interesting to see where John Elway's priorities lie, because as successful as the Peyton Manning era was in Denver, you could also argue that it cost them, it put them in the situation they're in now, in that, you know, they went out and they were able to recruit and Elway closed the deal that brought Peyton Manning to Denver, and then shortly thereafter they drafted Brock Osweiler in the second round, where he sat for the better part of 4 years. And of course there were events that happened in that fourth and final season when he finally did get some playing time that led to some of the tensions and feelings that ultimately, you know, he ended up in Houston. But I would argue that a lot of the reason why he chose Houston is because he didn't really feel over the time he was in Denver that he was a priority, that the Broncos were truly invested in him. And Eric, at the same time, with all this Tony Romo talk, you know, looking at priorities, you got to wonder how bringing in a guy, even if you assume Tony Romo's going to be lucky and avoid the injury bug for the first time since 2012 and play a full 16-game season, maybe 1 or 2 years, that's going to set back the Paxton Lynch era. That's going to set him back in his development. You can't get around that. It's going to happen because these guys learn best with live bullets. Wouldn't you say that, Eric, that guys, especially quarterbacks, the reps in real game situations are what makes the most difference in terms of developing them through those situations like third down and, as Siemian talked about, red zone situations?
All players, they definitely learn more from live action than in practice. I mean, that's why you have practice warriors, but game failures or players who don't show up in practice who steal the show in games. Definitely two different kind of things. But the whole situation with going after Tony Romo is that they've learned from Brock Osweiler in that whole situation. They're not going to repeat mistakes that were made. Bringing in Tony Romo, from what I understand, would be a short-term deal with low guaranteed money, basically a series of option deals that allows Denver to get out to where they can, as soon as Paxton Lynch is ready, they can make the switch to him if it's during season, or release Tony Romo and start Paxton Lynch the next season. They're definitely prepared for getting Lynch to be the future of the franchise.
Well, and that's good to hear. I mean, you invest a first-round pick in a quarterback. I mean, there's a lot that goes into that, and the fate of the organization often hangs on such decisions. So it'll be interesting to see how things shake out, and I'm sure we'll come back to it. Now, before we get out of here, though, again, Super Bowl 51 coming up here in 2 days. You'll be listening to this likely on Friday. The Atlanta Falcons will compete in just their second Super Bowl, while the New England Patriots, of course, will be competing in their 9th as a franchise. With how experienced Bill Belichick and Tom Brady are in the big moments, it's hard to see Atlanta pulling out the upset. Eric, I'm going to weigh in after you. How do you see Super Bowl 51 shaking out? Who do you got? Who wins?
My hope is that the Falcons win. My gut is that the Patriots win. I don't want to see it. I don't like the Patriots. I haven't liked the Patriots for a long, long time. But that experience they have, there's definitely a big difference in quality of talent they have on the teams. Not saying that the Falcons aren't talented, but Matt Ryan's no Tom Brady, and it all starts with the quarterback position. I just have a hard time seeing the Falcons pull it out. I hope they do. I think both teams score in the high 20s. With the winner just squeaking out the low 30s.
It's a David and Goliath type matchup. I know they're the underdogs, and maybe it's just wishful thinking, but I am going to pick Atlanta to win this game. I'm not confident that New England's defense is going to be able to stop Atlanta's offense. Who knows? But football is always about scoring. I think Super Bowl 51 will really come down to which offense gets the ball last. And I would agree with you that it's going to be in the high 20s, low 30s. But I'm picking Atlanta to win this game. And again, hey, everybody, thanks for listening. Thanks for sticking with us this week. Eric, you've been awesome this week. Third appearance on the show. Thanks for taking the time to talk some draft, to talk some Broncos with us, brother.
Yeah, no problem. I'm glad to be on.
We'll get you back on here more and more as we get closer to the draft. And of course, go find Eric on Twitter, at Eric Trickle. Be sure to follow at Locked On Broncos as well. I am, of course, at Chad N. Jensen, Luke, at Luke Polglaze. We want to hear from you. We love hearing from you, so hit us up. Check out the other killer podcasts on the network, Locked On NFL Draft, especially right now. It is rocketing up the iTunes charts. You're going to want to check that out. And don't forget to subscribe, y'all. For Luke, for Eric, I'm Chad. We'll talk to you next week.
Mile High Huddle.